Good afternoon. Very nice to have your company. We begin to discuss the affairs of the day. If you're giving us your opinion on them, the panel at radionz.co.nz, or if you're texting 2101, with what the world's talking about today, Zoe Ferguson, excuse me, shortly, in the frustrating age of contradictory health advice, we're told, no, don't take aspirin to prevent strokes. And a turnaround, too, on how much exercise we need daily, especially in middle life. The fascinating justification from the British government of their for their internet snooping. China comes out against independence for Scotland. Perfectly good potatoes going to waste in Britain because consumers don't like cutting them. And people don't like the new tap-and-go cards either, as we know. But soon it'll be palm and go, thanks to vein scanning technology. Steve McCabe, Tainui Stevens on the panel today. David Cunliffe's letter on behalf of the Chinese businessman Donghua Lu. Despite a denial by him that there was any advocacy, he's still saying there wasn't. And what that means now. Poverty among New Zealand children, are some of them really worse off than kids in the slums of India? The classical music all children need to hear, and our tourism halo is in danger of slipping. That's after 4 o'clock. But Zoe Ferguson first. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Jim. How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Good.
Now I'm not taking aspirin.
You're not?
No, I'm not.
You can take aspirin for everyday things, but the NHS in the UK has said that their advice to heart patients, because they said to heart patients, take aspirin to guard against strokes.
Yes, I remember that.
Yeah, but actually new research has shown that it's ineffective in reducing the chance of strokes for people with heart rhythm disorders.
Right, so a category of stroke propensity.
Yes.
Right, okay.
So what these experts are saying now, that a new generation of drug is currently being created, and it will be much better than the blood-thinning aspirin, and that it could save up to 7,000 strokes and 2,000 premature deaths per year just by switching to that new drug.
Yeah, I mean, the clarification's welcome, but, of course, the advice prior was not that advice, was it? And that's the thing. But with, as I said, the age of contradictory health advice,
Come
out saying one thing and then say, oh, hang on, it's not very effective if you've got heart rhythm disorder.
Well, that's right. And it's also the same with exercise as well. We get mixed messages about, just the other last week saying that New Zealanders, we have an obesity epidemic, which I find quite interesting. And the fact that we are the fourth most overweight country in the OECD. And yet there's new research out today, actually, from Canada saying that people are not pushing themselves and they actually need to push themselves harder because they're not getting the workout that they need.
Hang on, we got told at one stage not so long ago that, in fact, exercise requirements, and we loved this, we're down to about 3 minutes a day, as I remember.
Well, yes, and I've actually just written a blog about this today for The Wireless, talking about different exercise. And there's a really great YouTube video called 23 and a half hours, and they say that all you need, and this is from a doctor who put it together, that you only need half an hour of exercise a day, and it doesn't even need to be intense. He said you could go for 10 minutes, three times a day, up and down the stairs, or walk to the waterfront and back, or just do something. But yeah, I thought it was quite interesting. But this research out of Canada, they looked at participants in the study who were people who had no physical activity, and they were asked to identify and define light, moderate and intensive exercise, and then they were asked to run on a treadmill to display the difference.
Yeah.
How do you think you would go, Jim?
Not so long on the treadmill. I've got a certain base level of fitness.
Yeah.
But the thing is, yesterday we were talking about the so-called 6,000 steps. Mm-hmm. And I think Michelle Bogue or Brian Edwards, one of the two, was saying, but hang on, the steps need to have a certain amount of vigour to them. You can't just stroll down to the waterfront and admire the lapping waves and then stroll home again. You've got to get that heart rate up. But we are told different things, and that's what I meant about the 3 minutes. At one stage, there were researchers claiming that just a really short, intense burst of exercise was what you really wanted. And the advice on this changes all the time.
It does. It absolutely does. But what they found with this as well is that people didn't push themselves as much as they needed to. And they were all good with the, kind of the softly light workout. But when it came to identifying moderate and intensive exercise, they just couldn't do it. And in the States, the classification of a moderate workout is a brisk walk, or playing doubles tennis or biking at about 16 kilometres an hour.
Getting up there.
Yeah, you know, it is really quite fascinating. But I think especially in this 23 and a half hours video on YouTube, they talk about just doing something. Doing something is better than doing nothing.
It's a bit dispiriting when you've got a speedometer on your bike and you're doing one of the rail trails and slogging into a headwind and you notice that you're doing 7 kilometres an hour. Steve McCabe, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I can definitely recognise exercise when I see it.
That's and that's all you need to be able to do
this
stage.
Absolutely. It's a
start. I take it slowly.
It's a start.
Zoe Ferguson, now what have you got? Oh, the survey, the British government's reasoning for surveilling people.
Yeah, they've said that the mass surveillance of UK citizens on the likes of Google, Twitter, YouTube and Facebook is actually legal. Now, the Charles Farr, who's the Director General of the Office for Security and Counterterrorism, has said this is legal because the popular sites are US-based, which means they're counted as external communications.
Yes, it's lovely, isn't it? External communications, so we're quite within our rights.
Yeah, and they don't actually need a warrant to look at this as well, because they are considered external communications. But what got me thinking is that because as New Zealanders, we also access, you know, get into these sites, and who doesn't have a Facebook or use Twitter or YouTube or Google? I mean, we use Google every single day, and because we're part of that security network, the Five Eyes, right? Do we fall under the same classification?
It's a good question, Zoe.
It would be nice if someone could answer that for me.
Someone's talked about surveilling on the text. There's no such word as surveil, says Sally Hume of Dunedin. Surveillance is what she's recommending. I'm sure she's right that there's no such word as surveil, although it's a trap I fall into, but it's a trap that's very easy to fall into because it's just useful parlance. You're a teacher, you're not an English teacher.
I'm a teacher and I'm English.
Yes, you're a teacher and you're English.
Indeed.
Thank you.
Yes.
Now, you're English, but you're not Scottish. And China has something to say about Scottish independence.
Yes. China is against Scotland becoming independent, which I thought was quite interesting. The Chinese Premier has said he supports a united Kingdom. And he said that, I believe the United Kingdom can stay at the forefront in leading the world's growth and development and also continue to play an important and even bigger role for regional stability and global peace.
Could it be, though, that the Chinese are very invested in regions not getting ideas about independence? You know, once the Tibetans start thinking that there's a thought.
Yes, they like to keep everything united, as united as possible, including President Obama, who likes the United States and also United Britain.
Yes.
Yeah, that's right. Obama came out yesterday, I think it was, who said that the UK is better off staying together. So it's almost like China kind of to, you know, getting in there with the US and
It's a classic case of it's none of their business, though, really, isn't it?
It's nice to know that so many people care. It really is. We feel special.
Now, speaking of feeling special, just because you're here, we've got a left field, just interrupting Zoe momentarily, we've got a left field sort of query from a listener. Could you ask a panellist who knows whether one can still produce vitamin D from sun on your skin when filtered through glass? This is from Tricia, and you're a physicist.
I am indeed a physicist, and unfortunately this does somewhat fall into the category of biology and medicine.
I suppose.
But since it's ultraviolet light, and we're getting into quantum mechanics and a bit of physics, the answer from... I did a bit of research on this, actually, because I had a feeling it might come up. And as far as we can tell, there seems to be the answer is probably not. It's not just sunlight, it's particularly the ultraviolet end of the sunlight that affects things in your skin, whether it's causing damage to the skin in the form of skin cancer and sunburns, or whether it's doing something actively good, like generating vitamin D.
Right.
It seems like ultraviolet, both UVA and UVB, does get filtered out to a large extent by glass.
So, Tricia, you'll have to go outside, walk down briskly to the waterfront to get the vitamin D on your skin. Now,
But don't go to Scotland. You'll get a whole lot of vitamin D there.
What's the old joke about Scotland? Who said this? It's got two seasons, June and winter. That was it Sean Connery? No, it was Billy Connolly.
I have to be honest, the very first time I ever actually saw palm trees growing in the wild was off the west coast of Scotland on the Isle of Mull.
Was it?
Absolutely, yeah.
That would have been a sight.
Yes, it was. It's incredible because of the Gulf Stream. They actually get warm enough weather in the summer for, you know, for both days of sunshine to generate palm trees.
Zoe, we've been talking about tap and go cards and dissatisfaction with them, or alarm about them from some listeners, and we discussed it on the panel.
Yeah.
Well, the ante is going up again.
Well, yes. Obviously, pay wave, what it's called here, and a student in Sweden has created a new type of pay wave where all you have to do is scan your palm. It's called Quickster, and it uses vein recognition technology.
Vein recognition technology.
Yes, yeah. And because just like our fingerprints, obviously we've got fingerprint technology and, you know, recognition, and it's kind of like that. It can read your palm, and we all have different palms, and they're all unique to us.
Is it the veins in our wrists, I wonder?
Well, I know.
Because it's not the lines on our palms.
Well, obviously. We actually have. If you look at your palm.
I'm looking at my palm here.
We've got the big grooves in the palm, and then we've actually got a lot of little lines and stuff through it as well. So what it does is the technology picks up all those little lines, and all those little lines are unique to us.
I see a bright future for you, Zoe.
Why, thank you. Is it in broadcasting?
All right, so vein recognition. He's a clever chap.
Yes. Very clever.
And that would simplify things a lot. So it would say to the machine who you are and how much money you've got in your bank account.
That's right.
All right.
Yeah, isn't that amazing?
But you know, since we mentioned Sean Connery before, I'm thinking of that one wonderful scene, I think it's in Diamonds Are Forever, where he actually has fake fingerprints and he supposedly he's authenticated as being whatever he's impersonating by these fake fingerprints. He's wearing the girl pours him a glass of scotch and then his glass is dusted.
Fingerprints aren't unique, are they? But they're the next best thing.
No. Well, I'm assuming the palm print is big enough.
Yeah.
That there'd be enough uniquenesses on it. But when the iPhone 5S came out recently with fingerprint recognition for the lock screen, apparently people did find a way of breaking that. They could actually reproduce people's fingerprints using some sort of acrylic. So that's fairly low stakes, but this is something very, very high stakes. This could get, you know, both dollars out of my bank account if they had this.
I wouldn't have thought the lines on palms are that particular.
Well, I think it's not just the main ones, I think, it's the tiny little ones, you know, the extension of your fingerprints.
I know there's a myriad of lines on your palm that I'm looking at now, but even so.
I know. This is making fantastic radio, isn't it? People staring at the palms
of
their
hands. Well, people can
look
at their
palms. While they're not driving and looking at their palms, that would be good.
Now, the reason we have phobias, and they're probably well known, mm-hmm. you know, being sort of ancestral fears and, you know, evolutionary survival techniques, but there's an Australian professor has come out talking about them, hasn't he?
Yeah, well, he said the two most common fears are snakes and spiders.
Yep.
And the snakes comes down to evolution, and it was an evolutionary advantage for our ancestors to be afraid of snakes. But he said studying a fear of spiders is much harder.
Yeah, I imagine getting over a fear of spiders, because they all talk about naturalisation and acclimatisation techniques for overcoming phobias. But some of these phobias would be hard to shake. I mean, you can do it for fear of flying, I think. In fact, you have some knowledge of that.
Yeah, my wife has actually managed to use some form of, what's the opposite of aversion therapy? Yeah, acclimatisation therapy to overcome the fear of flying. I'm still trying to get over my ephebophobia.
Your what?
Ephebophobia. So the fear of teenagers.
That wouldn't serve you well in a classroom.
Yeah, I do my best, I really do.
Well, they say that other fears normally come from a negative experience. So is your fear of teenagers?
Yeah, I think we'll join the dots on that one. Yeah,
people say, you know, you must have been frightened by a spider, you know, when you were 3 years old and cannot remember. I've never been sure about that.
Well, they think that this Otmar Lipp, he's the professor of psychology, he said it's possible people fear spiders because of how unpredictable they are. And another theory is that spiders also provoke disgust.
Yeah.
And that's why people don't like them.
Quite a few things provoke disgust, but you don't have phobias about them.
No, and it's a very specific phobia, isn't it? It's not sort of all creepy crawlies or all insects. It's very specifically eight-legged creatures. So you just often count the legs before you need to be scared.
But some people are scared of all sorts of interesting things, like hedgehogs and sparrows. Do you have a particular fear, Zoe?
Yes, I do. I'm a keen gardener, just like you, Jim. I know that you like your gardening, and I do not like worms.
No, they
just gross me out. And I was in the garden recently with my husband, and we found this ginormous worm, and I just freaked out. And I asked him to flick it away, and so he picked it up and went to flick it back in the garden, except he flicked it at me,
no.
And it was horrible. Oh,
I can see you're still suffering from that. I can hear that in your voice. I quite like worms.
Yeah. I mean, they do good things for the garden, but just, they gross me out. Yuck.
All right. Now, we don't have time to talk about the interesting gender classifications suggested in Canada. We might save that till tomorrow, but spuds.
Spuds, yes. The potatoes in the UK, they've had a bumper season. They're growing far too big. And consumers don't want to buy them because pretty much they will not cut to anything bigger than 5 centimetres.
They don't want to take a knife to a potato.
No, they don't want. No, they can't be bothered. And so these poor potato farmers in Jersey are really struggling to sell all their stock.
Oh, for goodness sake.
I know. Isn't that terrible?
There is a trend in supermarkets here, though, isn't there, to have nice little potatoes?
But yes, which
can't
is...
say I've paid attention, really. I'm just noticing it seems to be rag on Brits Day that I'm here.
Well, you are here.
Yeah, so therefore, yes.
Zoe Ferguson, thank you very much.
Thank you.
What the World is Talking About, Steve McCabe, coming up with Tainui Stevens after 4 on the panel.